check it out, Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two indie games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're doing Mercenary Kings and the Shadowrun Returns expansion, Dragonfall.
Yeah, continuing our trend of making the DuckFeed.tv network like the premier source for Shadowrun-related video, like media. Like there's only the Xbox game that we haven't covered at this point, and the weird Sega CD game that's only in Japanese. Like, video games based on Shadowrun, we got your number.
Which is good, because it's a fun universe and they're good games, so.
Yeah. Yep. The batting average is very high. Real quick at the top of the show, we want to mention the network. We started a Patreon account. We're not going to do a full spiel on it, but we definitely appreciate it. As a kind of the newest part of the network. We still want to contribute as much as we can, and we'd love it if you could throw us a couple bucks a month for that.
Yep.
It's at patreon.com/duckfeedtv, all one word.
Yep. And buck a month if you can spare it will help us out a ton. So
yeah, absolutely. Yep.
So let's go ahead and jump straight into Mercenary Kings.
Mm-hmm.
So Mercenary Kings, it is a game developed by Tribute Games, who are the people who did the Scott Pilgrim versus the World game,
mm-hmm.
which I really like that game. That was a co-op beat-em-up game based on Scott Pilgrim, obviously. But my favorite thing about Tribute Games is their artist, Paul Robertson, who is just like a fantastic pixel artist. And this game came out on Windows last month in March, and is also available on PlayStation 4, and it's mm-hmm. soon coming to PlayStation Vita.
Yeah. I would go as far as say Scott Pilgrim versus the World is probably my second favorite beat-em-up. Like, I love that game.
Yeah, I really love that game as well. Yeah. I don't even know what beat-em-up I'd put before it.
I really like Shadow of Mystara.
See, I've never played that, so
I'll have to check it out.
All right. Yeah,
like if it were an indie game, we'd totally do it for the show. It's like it's really cool. Like imagine like a beat 'em. I mean, I guess Scott Pilgrim has experience points and stuff like that. But this was an arcade game in the early 90s that had like magic spells and experience points and equipment and stuff.
Was
it's
that
very
the
cool.
Dungeons & Dragons one? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I played like a quarter's worth of that.
Yeah. Very very little. This is you can kind of tell the way that the Scott Pilgrim game was their take on a beat 'em up. This is their take on like a Contra or Metal Slug.
Yes.
Kind of experience. Even down to the images for it look like Konami box art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the gray borders.
So, aside from that stuff, what do you like about Mercenary Kings, Gary?
Yeah. I think that like this game has a whole bunch of potential. Like, I really like how it looks. I like how it feels. Like, I like just jump arcs and timing and everything.
Mm-hmm.
There is like a lot of kind of strategy to be found in its reload system, where you have unlimited ammo, but you can kind of do, I think they lifted this from Gears of War, which I've never played, but I think I've read that it has a slight, timing mini game to reload.
Right.
And you get a bonus if you do it correctly. That kind of keeps you engaged. And there's a lot of like kind of deciding if you have enough bullets left to take on this threat or not. And then like a lot of, it looks like, and I didn't get a chance to play too much of the game, but a lot of potential for like character customization and upgrading, including, crafting, which like I want to make illegal. I never want to see crafting again in another video game again. And it doesn't add anything here. I just let me buy the fucking things. Like, it's really stupid. It's almost, without, it's like the same thing as, it's almost the same crafting as Dust in that, you can, just find tons and tons of just garbage everywhere. Yeah.
And it's only used to restrict what you can and can't buy based on what junk you picked up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's pretty dumb. So other than, I think it kind of has the potential in that respect. And it's also co-op. I didn't get a chance to play it co-op, but it seems like it'd be very fun to play co-op. Like, I liked it. But this is another of the, our infamous, our going down history, check it out, Comrade, hardball style. Like, are you saying, Mr. Glauber, that Obama was not born in America? Is that what you're saying? It is another one of our famous disagreements, because Nick did not care for this too much.
Yeah, I'm not saying that Obama was not born in America, but I am saying that Mercenary Kings Falls
is not born in America.
Yeah, it's definitely not born in America. No, I think a lot of its mechanics really fall short. I really, really wanted to like this game a lot. Paul Robertson is probably my favorite pixel artist I can name by name at the moment. He just makes gorgeous, gorgeous pixel art. And this game just looks really cool. Like you said, it's got a lot of the emphasis from Contra and Metal Slug games, which, you know, Metal Slug was known for its pixel art, so it's kind of carrying on that torch.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the mechanics just kind of don't mash well together for me. You know, aside from the crafting system, which I think, you know, crafting systems are always tacked on, but this one feels especially tacked on. But some of my main gripes is enemies respawn basically once they're off screen,
mm-hmm.
Which for a run and gun game like this, especially with how high damage output the enemies have, it really stunts especially co-op, which you didn't get to play. But if one person goes down in co-op, they spawn in their health in the health hut. And essentially, if you guys want to continue playing together, not essentially be playing two separate games at the same time, you have to go try and meet up again, and you have to fight your way back through the enemies. You know, if you're the guy who lived, you have to fight your way back through the enemies to go find your guy who's fighting through the enemies again after he respawned. And it's just a huge annoyance, and, you know, you're going to lose some health along the way again if you're not super good at the game at that point already. It just feels like try to strike a middle ground between the run and gun of Metal Slug and Contra, where you're pretty much, you know, for the most part, you can practically hold right the whole game and just make sure you're placing your bullets where they need to go, with some weird need to kind of sit down and tactically take out enemies who are positioned in specific ways to make you, you know, dodge their bullets and get your shots in at the right time.
Yeah, there's a weird emphasis on exploring in the game. Like, the levels have tons of verticality to them, which is an odd choice for this. But, like, a lot of these things, I think that I don't necessarily think you're wrong about this. This is not a classic check it out comrade dust up. Like, I think that there's just things that I think are kind of neat, but maybe don't work. And maybe I'm just, what I'm picking up on is wanting them to work the same way right. You are. Like one of the things I was thinking about is that time limit. Like, when you're doing these missions, and there are a lot of different missions, like, you have a time limit, and it's pretty generous, but it's still a time limit. And I'm kind of into it. Like, oh, you know, I can stop and fight this guy, or I can try to figure out a way to get around him quickly, you know, and try to rush to it. Or I can take my time and get equipment, because there's, like, hidden things. Like, it's this weird tension of systems that, like, aren't typically put together. You know, like, and I guess maybe that's what I'm reacting to, is the novelty of it more than necessarily the success.
Right. Well, see, what I think is, this game is probably really, really fun for people who are good at this game.
Mm.
Like, once you have the mechanics down and you can get your way through a level and, you know, bullet dodge what you need to dodge and take out enemies without, you know, screwing up your bullet timings and, you know, getting stuck in between two guys while you're trying to reload your gun or whatever, once you have all that down, it's probably really fun. Like, I think there's enough mechanics, enough cool stuff in there to make it enjoyable. It doesn't hook you into that right off the bat. Like, you're going to hit a wall on the first level over and over again until you get those mechanics down. And that I don't like being, you know, my hand held all the way through a game, but I also don't like being shoved into complete difficulty without any emphasis to get beyond it. Like, Dark Souls somehow hooks you really well into getting past that initial curve. This game didn't get me there. Like, I could see some things I could do. I knew there was some weapons I could buy, some basic upgrades I could buy, and I, you know, there's a little bit of push that I you know, wanted to get some of those, but nothing was enough to be like, all right, I'm gonna hash out this first level for 3 hours until I finally get it golden.
Yeah, I think that part of it, and I'm not saying this in, like, a MLG way, I don't think I had quite as hard a time as you did, and I don't know what to attribute that. Like, it's definitely a tough game, but I definitely didn't spend that much time on the first set of levels. What I will say, though, that I think is true, is I think that what maybe the game is trying to do to be that carrot on the stick is doing the kind of the story and humor and stuff, which it fell really flat for me. I imagine it did for you as well. Like, everything looks great, but nothing is funny or interesting that people say. Like, they introduce a lot of side characters, none of which are very useful or interesting, you know, right off
the bat. It may also have been that, you know, I didn't put any significant time into this single player, and maybe, you know, co-op increases difficulty, co-op does, but I don't know. What whatever it is, maybe something about the co-op system is actually making it harder for me to get mm-hmm. that first jump in.
Yeah, totally possible. And I also thought the opposite. Like, I wondered whether, because it was still kind of difficult for me, I wondered if it was balanced for co-op. Like, if you've ever played, like, Magicka, which mm-hmm. is a game I really like, but you can't play it by yourself.
Or even Risk of Rain, which,
yeah.
which we played.
Yeah, that's really difficult to play by yourself. You know, so the balance, it's like these weird balance issues, which is frustrating because it's like a, obviously a very polished product in a lot of the ways, like that, the way that it feels and the way it looks and the sound effects and everything, like everything kind of fits in a way that speaks production, but I do think that maybe it needed a little bit more time in the oven.
Yeah.
You know?
And what's strange is I think it actually got, you know, some negative critical feedback on some of the things we're even saying, and they've made, as far as I can tell, zero effort to address community complaints, which, you know, the quickest way to fall out of my heart is to not interact with your community in a way that makes your game better.
Yeah, I hadn't seen anything, you know, about that. Like, most of the stuff that I've read about it was relatively positive. But I haven't been following it. I didn't hear about it until you said, hey, we should do this game for the show.
Right.
So it wasn't on my radar for one reason or another.
The reason why I wanted to play this for the show was purely because of Paul Robertson and the Scott Pilgrim game. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a good time. Like, if you go to his Tumblr, you can see some of the amazing animations that have shown up in this game. And those are gorgeous to look at. And I will just look at, like, the graphics of this game all day, but it's not enough to keep me playing it, I don't think.
You bought a four-pack of this, and you gifted me a copy. What does it set you back? How much does this game cost?
I think it's 15, or with the four-pack, it was, like, 11.25 or something per copy.
Yeah, I could see that being a little bit, like, I would give this if, you know, it's not necessarily a review show. We're not doing thumbs up or thumbs down, but, like, I think when Steam does, like, a $2 or $3 sale on this, like, I could still see this being fun to play with people. And it's fun to look at and everything. Like, I do think I kind of liked it more than some games we've done for the show that I found to be flawed. Like, I just kind of had, you know, it just felt good in my hands in a way that is hard to...
It's definitely not bad in every way. Like you said, like, the movement's fantastic. The animations are really good. There's just a lot of clashing mechanics that are hurting my brain, I think,
yeah.
is basically the gist of it.
Need an editor. Like, cut out crafting, cut out, you know... Even the respawning enemy thing is a good point. Like, that never, even though it never got to me because I didn't have that much reason to backtrack, it never added anything. Like,
right.
I was never like, thank God this guy came back.
Right.
You know, that's dumb.
Even if it's a difficulty thing, and, you know, you do kind of have to backtrack through some portions of the level. Like you said, there's an exploration element, and sometimes you kind of come across dead ends or retracing some of the path you already came across.
Mm-hmm.
Just make the window bigger. Like,
yeah,
it seems to be as soon as they're off screen, they respawn, and that's just ridiculous.
That has to be intentional. That has to be like an homage to NES stuff, like a Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah,
there's no. It's not the kind of thing you can do on accident. That has to be something they did on purpose. Not saying that makes the right decision,
right?
But I don't think that's an accident.
No, I think you're right, but I think it needs, like you said, some tweaking, and it needed to come out, have community response, and get a patch that just tweaked a couple things, and it'd be a lot closer to a quality product, to my mind.
Yeah, I could see that. Like, I'm interested to see if it changes at all. I still want to try the co-op, but it's definitely flawed.
Yeah, I agree.
What's not flawed, however,
yeah, right.
is Shadowrun Returns Dragonfall, which, like, two things I was thinking about when we decided to do this for the show. One thing is I was thinking back on the games I played this year, and, like, I feel like, and I, you know, end of the year lists are dumb, but if I made one, this is probably going to land, like, somewhere in the top, like, five. Like, I really love this game.
I really, really love this game.
Yeah, it's so... And the other thing I thought about, and I wanted to talk to you about it a little bit, and this part of the conversation is only going to have legs depending on what you've already done, but, like, it shares a lot with the Bioshock Infinite DLC in, like, apology by way of DLC,
yeah.
which is a
yeah.
thing that's been happening lately. Like, did you play Burial at Sea at all?
I didn't play the... No, I did not play the DLC for Infinite. I've only played the main game.
I think it's worth playing. The second one is the most flagrant up in, like, this game, this Dragonfall, I thought was the most flagrant apology in game form. Burial at Sea Episode 2 is amazing in that respect. Like, it is everything that people have criticized about Bioshock 1, you can watch them scrambling to apologize for it. It's kind of shameful. Like, it's a little bit embarrassing. There's a part where, like, literally, you know, because everybody thought, like, oh, Bioshock's supposed to be this thoughtful game, and you're constantly shoving a chainsaw into people's face. It's dumb. And there's a literally a part where, like, you control Elizabeth in that one, and she's like, I don't want to, you know, shove a chainsaw into people's face. Like, I'm not you, Booker. And Booker's like, maybe I didn't have a choice, or maybe that was just the way that, you know, I was, you know, determined to be. Or he says, like, something like, it's really, really obviously speaking to the, like, answering the critics. Player.
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
But this game does that too. But in a way that, like, is just, you know, better.
Oh, this is, yeah, it feels really heartfelt.
Like, yeah. Like, this is the opposite. This is a good game to pair with that Mercenary Kings. Like, I didn't know that Mercenary Kings thing before you brought it up, but, like, this is a great example of a developer being humble as shit.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, we both like Shadowrun Returns. That's a, Dead Man's Switch is a good game.
Yeah.
But I think this is a great game.
I agree. We never could kind of give it a proper intro. Any of those who didn't listen to our Shadowrun Returns episode, we talked about Dead Man's Switch, which is the base campaign that the game originally shipped with expectations and knowing that there was going to be a Berlin campaign coming out later.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that. We were already excited for it at that point, and it came out. Do you know the date that Dragonfall came out? I actually don't have it on hand.
Yeah, but it is February 27th.
Yeah, so February, they released the expansion, Dragonfall. And as Kickstarter backers, we got it for free.
Yep.
But other people can buy it as an expansion if you bought Shadowrun Returns. And it is just everything everyone didn't like about the original brought up. So, sorry to go back just a second. Shadowrun Returns is a top-down tactical role-playing game in the style of like Baldur's Gate or Fallout, but in the Shadowrun universe, which is an awesome cyberpunk tabletop RPG.
But more grid-based.
Yeah.
Like it's like a Fallout or a Baldur's Gate that turns into Final Fantasy Tactics, or like a cover-based Final Fantasy Tactics when you get into a fight. You know, with action points and the like. Yeah, and it's based in this, you know, really rich setting that we've talked about, you know, before. This, like, it's the, you know, the future. It's in the 20s, 50s, and magic has come back, and technology has advanced, and, you know, Shadowrun is just one of the most, you know, the richest, like, fictional worlds there are. This game, you know, I feel like Dead Man's Switch did some things with it, but this game just does a lot better, and it's just much better written. Like, whoever is on the script for this was just really on point.
Yep.
You know, like, it's like the dialogue is really sharp. The characters are really likable. The plot twists, like the, you know, the little inconsequential things that you do, the side missions are interesting.
Yep.
And the main story missions, like, I had like Walking Dead levels of like, is this a good decision or not feeling,
Me too.
You know,
Me too.
Which is the best. Like, that's all you want to make is bad, you know, hard decisions.
I still don't know. Like, I made my final decision and I'm still like, man, I wonder if that was probably the worst thing. Like, yep. I'm not sure. So
yeah, and that's totally the mark of a good. Like, that's why The Walking Dead is good.
Yep,
is that like it is a hard decision making simulator, and that's great. And this incorporates that with just like really, really, you know, gameplay that really speaks to me as well. Like, I always like, you know, these kind of grid based. You know, I love Final Fantasy Tactics, and I liked the there was actually a Ghost Recon game that was a 3DS launch title.
I remember you telling me about that.
Yeah, that game's really good. Like, you know, this kind of thing's in my wheelhouse. But this just does more with it because since you have all those different systems, like you have magic and technology and the Matrix, and magic and the Matrix are better integrated this time to where it actually feels like you're using all of these things rather than, you know, the first one, which felt like essentially like a tactical shooter with, you know, some magic missiles and occasionally like a really tacked on Matrix thing.
Right.
You know, it just does such a better job.
It's everything that Dead Man's Switch failed at, done, or not even failed at, but just didn't do quite as successfully, done perfectly.
Yeah. It's a great game.
So some of the complaints we had about the original one, I probably should have went back and listened to the episode actually, but I know for a fact we said it felt too linear.
Mm-hmm.
They fixed that right up in this one.
Yeah.
In this one, you have a kind of overarching goal at some point to collect a certain amount of money, and you just have your run of a few select runs via a computer that you can accept or decline. Some of which have their own kind of moral choice to them. Like, I declined one specifically because I didn't like the sounds of it. Mm-hmm. And then there's also other side missions that come up that may not actually earn you much money towards this goal, but can grant you other boons in the kind of hub world here,
mm-hmm.
By getting you better access to better weapons, or just making a better situation for the people in the flux state of Berlin.
Yeah, there's a lot more kind of respect for player freedom, and a lot more of that. You know, as somebody who's like played a lot of video games based on tabletop games, like that's something that's kind of a, you know, a passion of mine. And like, you look at what video games can emulate and what things they can't. And tabletop game, one of the appeals of a tabletop game is that it is open. Like, unless you have the world's shittiest DM, like, you can do whatever you want, and the DM is going to be interested in what you're doing. And that never happens in a video game, but as close as you can get to that, the better. And this game does a much better job of that by having, you know, a prescribed beginning and ending, but the middle is very open and respects what you're interested in. So if you're playing, you know, an asshole, you can go do missions and complete them as an asshole and go do asshole missions. And if you want to be a savior, you can do that. And if you want to be, you know, an opportunist, like, you know, your play choice matters, which is like essentially the defining aspect of video games for me. Like, I want the choices I'm making to matter and, or feel like they matter, you know, in as many ways as possible.
That's what separates, you know, games from any other form of media, is there's direct input from the viewer.
Totally.
Yeah. So if that direct input doesn't have any impact, then you're just making a movie where you press buttons along to it.
Right. Making Indigo Prophecy.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's what that terrible piece of shit is. But like, it's not just like having the impact. There's also like the illusion of impact, which is really annoying, you know, and this does a better, like there's, you know, it's not a black and white world, you know, and like everything that you want to be is viable. It's not like, as much as I like adore the Baldur's Gate games, for the most part, your quest in that, like if you wanted to be an asshole, and there are some quests that are only available if you want to be evil, which is great. But some of the quests, if you want to complete them in an evil way, like evil gets you more money, good gets you more experience. And there was no points in between. Like it was just this mechanical thing.
Yeah.
Whereas this, like there's really not good and evil in this world. Like they did a good job of capturing that ambiguity of the setting.
Right. And you know, luckily, I like that Weissman was in on this game himself, since he's the, you know, the creator of Shadowrun. But they took the fact that it's a game about what cyberpunk is. You know, the cyberpunk is this high technology, low life thing. Well, that's what you are. You're a person living in the low end of the world who is doing things against the corporations or what have you to make a quick buck. And so you're breaking into corps and you're helping people kill or steal or what have you. This takes that and adds a lot of ambiguity in the morals on top of it, which is hard to do when you're locked into something that is already supposed to be a low life setting.
Yeah, that's not something that video games usually do. Like, especially if you're going to post like a David and Goliath scenario, you know, like where you're going up against a big evil corporation, but it's like, what, you know, if I hurt the big evil corporation in this way, this happens, or I lose this benefit. Like, excuse me, they just do a very good job of that. It's also a setting that hasn't been explored, like a Shadowrun setting that has not been explored in video game form.
Right.
Like, there is a Berlin source book forever, but, you know, this is the first time it's ever been realized, and it feels really different than the Seattle of Dead Man's Switch. Like, mm-hmm. There's lots of, you know, it's got kind of more, like, underground cities and kind of Morlocks and things like that. You know, and it just does that better. I don't know. It's just the same thing, but that I liked, but just 1,000 times more.
Yeah,
and
no,
really
for,
good
for sure. The hub world, it's obviously a very tight knit community,
mm-hmm.
and you're kind of an outsider coming into it. And they actually play that off really well, which is pretty impressive. That was never a feeling you got in Dead Man's Switch in the Seattle campaign. But in this one, it's not only this hub world with these shops, like these people all know each other, and you're replacing someone who was kind of their protector, like someone who they knew had always had their best interest in mind. You're stepping into that person's shoes, and what you do with that is kind of your choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent job of that. And we want to talk a little bit about those choices and stuff that we keep alluding to, but that's definitely spoiler territory. So we're going to get to that in the spoiler space. section of things. So, but a well recommended game. You know, one of my favorites we've done for the show so far. And like I said, going to end up, if I end up compiling, I'm not going to compile a list because those things are stupid. But if I were to, like, it's definitely one of my favorite games. Like in a year where Dark Souls 2 didn't come out, like it would be, you know, a contender because I really loved it.
I agree. So, I agree.
Yeah.
All right.
By way of admin, what can they do, Nick?
Well, they can give us some rates and reviews on iTunes.
Yep.
That's probably the biggest factor for getting us some new listeners if you'd like to help us in that regard. So if you like the show, you know, you don't need to lie, but you can go on to iTunes and say what you like about it, and that'll help people see us.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, we're also on some social networks on Facebook/ Check It Out Comrade and on Twitter/ Comrade Podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and tell people you know about it, talk about it on message boards and stuff, and go back the Patreon at patreon.com/ Duckfeed TV, all run word.
Yep.
Yeah, so we're going to talk a little bit about those tough choices in Dragonfall right after this music sting.
Play us out, see.
Right. I dream of rain.
All right, Steve, play us back in.
Blue Turtling.
Right. We're good. Okay. Right. So, spoilery stuff about Dragonfall. What were some of the choices in the game that you really liked, and what path did you take?
So I'm gonna go through the ones I remember. I played this longer ago than you did. The first one that was like the major kind of moral choice that struck me though was the troll who is the like cyber zombie.
Mm-hmm.
Which like every time I say cyber zombie it sounds stupid, but it's actually a super cool idea.
Yeah,
that's straight from the thing. And it's just like, you know, Shadowrun introduced this idea of essence, and essence is how human you are. The more cybered up you get, the less human you get. And when you get to zero essence, you die. And that's a hard, fast rule for Shadowrun. It has been. And I think in third edition, they introduced a corporation figure out a way to break that rule and get people into the negatives. And you go up against a corporation that has done this. And it becomes this very interesting, like, tactical choice because, like, you have a character on your team who is close to that.
Yes.
One of your Glory, who is the people you're going to become close to. And she's very cold, but you get these little hints of, you know, her personality throughout. And it's because she is so cybered up. And she used to be magical. You can find that out. If you're a magical character, I don't know if you did that, but if you're a magical character, you can read her aura.
Yes.
And find that. So she, you know, is like, hey, this person is just screaming inside. Like this person is being tortured. We have to kill them. And then, you have, Decker with you who, you know, thinks that he could be useful. And also you're in a very dangerous situation. So there's a tactical thing that you're considering too. So it's like, and a financial one, like getting this this creature. And you just heard Project something. You didn't know what it was initially. And then when you find out it's a living thing, like getting this thing back, you know, unharmed is going to get you a huge cash payout.
Right.
So they do a really good job of factors. And I ended up using him to get out. I think you can actually kill him in the room where you find him, but I ended up using him to get out and then killing him in the parking garage.
I think I killed him right off the bat. I'm not sure. So let's see, there was some of the optional missions you could take were sort of moral choices into whether or not you would actually take them or not. The first main one I could think of was the Azteca Corporation one.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a huge moral choice except for the fact that the person who's trying to get you to take this job is saying that basically millions of innocents are going to die, but can't tell you any more than that.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to, it's kind of relying on, do you trust this total stranger? Are you, playing the paladin who's going to go rescue whoever it is based purely on the fact that someone says there's going to be people dying because of this?
Well, there's no, with that one, it's important that there's no rescue. She just wants you to blow up the building, which there are innocent people in. So even if, you know, regardless of what she's saying is true, she's asking you to kill people. So you're killing, you know, 1,000 people to, if you take this person's word for it, save, you know, 1,000,000.
Right.
With this really cool, like, this reawakened blood magic.
Yeah.
Thing that happens, which is super spooky. And on top of that, in most of these missions, there's a corporation that gives you a side mission, halfway through, and it's usually to do like the shitty thing. Like they're like, we're going to give you a bonus if you do the garbage thing. But if you don't do it and you go back and talk to that guy, he explains to you why making the right choice didn't, like the good choice didn't really matter. Like early on, you go up against this, like the future equivalent of the Ku Klux Klan. And you go up to them and you kill the, you know, you can kill the leader of that group,
mm-hmm.
If you want to. And then someone just said, you know what? You've turned this guy into a martyr. And this was one chapter. Like, what have you even possibly done? You know, and he's not wrong. You know, you just like hate, you know, hate racists, want to do it.
Yeah. Okay. So the real major, first choice in the game, there's two major ones that are both near the end, and the first one is turns out that Monica, who is the friend of yours who you replaced as the leader of this runner gang, she was killed by she tried to jack into the Matrix, and her brain was fried, and a couple other people on the way have been fried as well, and you trace it down via the money and knowledge you collect to this AI that was produced called Apex.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know that Apex is protecting the end location you're trying to get to. You need to go take out Apex if you want this to be at all feasible, essentially. So when you get down to this other location that you've picked up information on and go trace down a route to take out Apex, Apex appears to you as Monica and says, I need your help.
Yep, she's J.C. Denton dead. Like when J.C. Denton merged with the Helios.
Exactly.
At the end of Deus Ex, spoilers. The but yeah, just like, you know, I am an AI. Like, I am an intelligent creature, you know, and this is a conscious. Like, when this happened, I, you know, fused with this person, and now I have what I lacked, which was a conscience. You know,
yep.
I don't want to be used any more than you want me to be used. And, it's like, that was definitely the choice that took me the longest to figure out what I wanted to do. Because like, you know, is this thing, what is this? It's like a new life. Do you feel comfortable exterminating this thing, you know, or trusting it when it has motivations that are 100% alien?
Well, and it was programmed, you know, originally to kill. And this could just be another venue of it trying to trap you or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
When it knows you're the biggest threat, this could be, you know, if it's this ultra intelligent programmed thing, then this just could be another venue for it to take you out. So whether or not you save it or take it out is a huge choice. And I told you right after I did it, I had just watched the movie Her, so I was feeling some AI sympathies. And and I decided to free Apex and give it its freedom.
And fuck it.
And then fuck it.
Yeah, in that way you do, which is fine. Yeah, whatever you want to do. I freed her as well, but it was kind of the way that I was playing because she was saying, you know, all the right things as far as getting back against the guy who I want, the dragon,
right.
And I was playing it as in, you know, vengeance quest.
Right.
Like, I'm a good person, but, you know, this person has to die.
Yeah, it killed one friend and then eventually also killed another close friend. So
yeah,
this fucker's going to die by whatever means necessary.
Yeah, no matter what. I don't know what the mechanical... I feel like there probably is a mechanical benefit to killing her because there's a huge mechanical benefit to saving her.
Right.
But I wonder what it is. Like, I feel like it's probably balanced in some way.
Yeah, the fact that we both chose the same route there kind of limits our ability to speak on that, but
yeah.
But yeah, I assume there's a big benefit to it. I mean, the reason why you're taking it out is because you know it's sort of the safeguard for all of the security at this mansion you're going to. So I imagine you get a lot of the same things by taking it out, but but yeah, by helping it also kind of eliminates one of the teams for you, on top of opening up a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, so, yeah. And the mission saving it is difficult. Like that's a really hard encounter too. So the I guess the opportunity cost is there as well. Like, you're earning that advantage by doing this very hard thing.
Yeah, very possibly.
We were talking, you talked about in the main episode about how well they did a job of building up the community, and they use that really well because, you know, something bad is going to happen to that town because that's how RPGs work. But they do a really good job of like making you, you know, fleshing out all the characters, and then when the shit hits the fan and you do the scene where you go back to this area that had been your safe haven, and it is now a combat arena and operates under the same rules that battles do. You know, it's really effective.
Yeah, it's pretty striking. Yeah. Like, that was a really good scene.
I thought so. And you're going and rescuing your friends, you know, that you've kind of spent this time with. Like, and again, they're not, it's not like, you know, Diedrich was as close to me as anybody in real life. Like, no. That's not true, but he's a really well fleshed out, likable character.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, they did a really good job. The big twist of it and the big final choice in it is that, you know, you find out about this dragon. These people are trying to bring this dragon back to life that has been, caused this Holocaust essentially in the world years ago in Germany. And it was taken out by this guy. I can't remember the name right now. But you're looking for that guy. Eventually you find him, and he has kept this dragon imprisoned and has more or less kind of been torturing it and is going to be using it to essentially kill all the dragons. It's down to that genocide question again.
Yep.
And it's a pathetic figure at this point. And, that's the big choice at the end. Like, do you go along with it? Do you fight against it? Like, he's not wrong. Like, right. None of the things he's saying, he's not a bad guy. He's,
well,
you know,
there's one downside to it, which is she's essentially, Firewing, the dragon, is essentially going to cause the same Holocaust she did before, except this time
right.
It's also going to spread this virus that is going to kill off the rest of the dragons as well.
Right. It's cauterizing the wound, though. You know, like,
yeah.
The idea, like, everybody who makes an argument that dragons should not be around is very compelling.
It's, yeah, well, they're very right.
Yeah.
In the world of Shadowrun, they are, in fact, these, you know, beings that are taking over all the corporations and, you know, treating humans as their, well, humans and metahumans as their peons.
So. Yeah, as their hordes, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, in the ways of old.
So he's not wrong at all.
Yeah. It's just a heavy price to pay, but he's not insane. He hasn't been, you know, driven into a cackling villain or anything. And like that choice gives you pause too. It's like they do a really good job of fleshing out the fiction to where, like, if you don't know what we're talking about, it probably sounds ridiculous. Like, and if we told you all the details of it, it would sound more ridiculous because it's all about a magic fire virus that she's going to spit out. Like, it's pretty dumb, but they sell it so well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They take it seriously enough for you to take it seriously.
Yeah.
Which is a hard thing to do. But yeah, so there's that choice. You know, are you going to help free the dragon from him, or are you going to allow him to continue on and kill thousands to help kill the dragon?
And if you saved Apex will say, you know, that you can, or she can optimize his process, but you have to give her some kind of special, you know, permission or freedom, I think.
Yes. So you have to turn over control of, you know, this very powerful thing, this dragon, which is loaded with this fire virus.
Mm-hmm.
You have to turn that over to this malevolent AI.
Yeah.
But it's saying that if you do, then it will optimize the virus to spread without killing and essentially use the displacement of the dragons to bring itself to power.
Right.
So are you okay with this rogue AI that you've helped free trying to wedge itself into your political system?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Pretty crazy. Which I did. And then.
And I did. I did as well. Yeah.
But then the AI really makes it like there's some real chilling language
yes.
at the end, you know, about, it not giving, you know, it being beyond these concerns. Like, you try to, like, okay, well, everything's going to be fine now, right? And it's like, you know, that doesn't mean anything. I'm learning on a scale that you never understood, you know? So, super spooky. Yeah.
Yep. And so those are the main choices in the game. And at the end of the game, there's one final scene after you've given whatever choices you've given and, you know, decide with your team who's going to keep running and who's going to stop. And there's a mission where you get on a train to talk to someone, and that someone is the representative for, another dragon. I forget which dragon was it. Do you remember?
It's the name? It's the big dragon. Isn't it like, Dunkelzion?
Yeah. Something of that sort. Who was also a big part of the ending of Dead Man's Switch.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically asking if you want to be a runner on behalf of this great dragon. So, it kind of leads me to believe that they're planning a third campaign that's going to kind of tie the two together and be a post game of both of them.
Yeah.
Possibly not, but they definitely left enough ties in there. Lofweir is his name.
Yeah, oh, there we are. Yeah, Dunkelzin is in America, I think. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Dunkelzin is the big, like, you know, example dragon in the Shadowrun world. But this is a different one. Which is going to be, I want three of these a year. You know, just keep making, like, fan community who can use these tools, step up your fucking game and, like, you know, make something this good.
Yeah, I think they've improved the tools along with the release of this one too. So I really hope there's some good community content coming out there. But man, it's gonna be hard to write as well as this one was.
Yeah, it's really great. Like probably gets the Comrades school seal of approval.
Oh yeah, like
super well done.
Almost as high of praise as we could sing of any game we've covered so far. So
yeah, so that's about it. Thank you very much for listening. This episode's run a little bit long. But hopefully you found something worth checking out, and we will see you in a couple weeks.
Yep. How's it going, guys?
Bye.